You hear that funky music, that means it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, New Relic. They are the ones that make that possible, bringing the show to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. And also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, or as I'm trying out this week, my Freoesthesis. The man who, all week, in honor of Infamous, has been spelling his name with small s, small p, capital I-C-E-R, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hey, everybody. Yeah, I've been trying that out for a week now. It's been good so far. I have the trademark applied. So, you know, you say it normally. You say Spicer, just like you say Infamous. But when you write it,
right,
you have to use the small, or else I don't send you media assets.
I think pretty much the lamest thing about the Infamous franchise is its stupid title. I think the way that they spell it like that or capitalize it like that is the only thing I don't like about that series. But we'll get to that.
They didn't take it Mortal Kombat Extremes, where everything in the game was like that, right?
That's true. That's a good point. Good point. There is some restraint. We, however, will not be showing any restraint because we have tons to talk about. A big week of GDC. There is big announcements. There is big games. Metal Gear is out. Infamous, as we mentioned, is out. Of course, you know, DLC is your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, DLC also means deliver Lee some company. Because the man who has been doing it solo lately with his very successful and awesome new podcast, Garnet on Games, he is back joining us today, our buddy, Mr. Garnet Lee. Welcome, dude.
Hey, what's up? Or as we say in Threesland, hi.
Yeah, right. Hello. Congratulations on your awesome new show, dude. I've been digging it.
I am so overwhelmed by the response, man. It is absolutely nuts how many people have been tuning in. Thank you so much if you've been listening to it. Really, man, totally. I, you know me, I'm speechless. I have nothing to say other than thank you. Bow.
Well, you have lots to say. Your show is all you and is informative and interesting and available on iTunes. So everybody should check it out when they get a chance, because I've been really digging it, and I wish.
By the way, you can just cut and paste that review and put it into iTunes, 5 stars, awesome.
Oh man, we also have March Madness this week, and we got to get to Tetris Gate, which has been rocking the interwebs, or at least rocking my inbox all week. We'll get to that as well.
Can we start? I know it's not a story of the week, but can I say something, Jeff? May I, please?
You can always say something, Christian.
Thank you. I appreciate everyone's feedback. I realize that sometimes when you do a show, not everyone will agree with your point of view. But I want to say up top that the whole point of March Madness isn't to do a simple game fact, who gets the most votes wins type thing. And it's also not to determine the real best game in the galaxy in the universe ever made.
Because
there are multiple universes. We found out last week. And two, it's fun. I understand that people take things seriously, but understand this, people. If you disagree with me, you're wrong. Like, that's all. No, I understand that people are passionate about games, but man, we got some great, I think you did too, Jeff, got some great feedback this last week. And then also just some vitriol. People were angry.
Tetris Gate. We'll get to that. We'll get to that, because March Madness is in the Elite Eight round, which is, it's gotten so much feedback, it's crazy. But that's not how we start the show. We start the show with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
That's right, Story of the Week, the segment of the show where we try to convince each other what the most important story of the week was. And since this was the week, last week, where we had GDC, and this was a particularly big GDC with some really juicy stuff coming out. We had our man on the street, Mr. Garnet Lee, was there.
Is that like some sort of reference to my not having a job?
you're on the street. Our man panhandling for money.
Mr. I was Garnet. Not in the TL, okay? Other than a couple of nights having a cocktail.
Hilarious. I suspect that we're all going to be on the same page about what the biggest story of this week was, but I want to hear what you think, Mr. Garnet Lee, being there at the center of the video game world for last week. What was the story of the week?
Crypt of the Necrodancer. No, you're seriously. That was really most fun. That and Hack and Slash, boy, did that look awesome or what? I hope you saw some of Hack and Slash. It was demonstrated at the experimental gameplay workshop.
This is the Double Fine game, right?
Yeah, and it looks so cool. See, I'm doing all this because I know where we're going, and I just want to make sure we get in some of the actual cool stuff that isn't just like, you know, the bombardment of VR headsets.
Dude, VR headsets. But okay, tell me about why Hack and Slash is cool before we move on to the real story of the week.
Hack and Slash is cool because Double Fine didn't pull any punches, and it gets pretty serious with you being able to dig into the scripting code of all the different characters and things you can, objects you can interact with inside the game. For those who don't know, Hack and Slash is Double Fine's roguelike game where the hack, instead of being hacking with a sword, is hacking as in hacking into the game. And it was first described, people thought, oh, you know, it'll be like they'll play around with Game Genie stuff and it'll be cute, right? But it's not just cute, it is incredibly deep, where you can get into every object in the game and then go into all of its scripting nodes and play around with all of the variables that tie all of the objects and the room script together in order to pass the challenge of each room. It's unbelievable, dude. It is going to blow your mind, and it is going to be so cool for people to play it, because as excited as folks get about what goes into their games and, you know, thinking about, well, how do you make a game? This little look that it takes into the logic and the way they showed the progression of levels sort of building like a logic class would, taking you through that progression, it's going to be so cool. Such a cool thing to play.
Really, well, you know how much I love puns, so I'm already on board with this one. The fact that the gameplay actually is more fun than the pun of hacking, I'm in. I'm excited for this. Did they have a release date yet?
No, they don't have a release date. And I imagine that this is going to be one of those games that will be very difficult to, you know, tie together, because you're simultaneously writing all of these scripts and writing all of these rooms, but at the same time, you're giving the player... So they're not faking it, in other words. They're actually giving the player direct control into the code of the game. That's nuts!
Yeah, that's
totally
pretty
great. It's totally nuts.
Is it real, or is it
like, this is crazy?
Are they really doing that, or is it sort of just making you feel like they're doing that?
No, that's what I'm saying, dude. They are really doing that. In other words, when what they've given you, the roguelike that you're playing, becomes a game interface for programming the game.
Wow. That does sound rad. And it's exactly what I want Double Fine to be doing. These small, interesting, outside the box, pushing the envelope type experiences. Super cool. Oh, I think we may have lost Christian for a second.
Aww. We can just fill.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you know, DLC, of course, is decided by listener contribution. We've been getting people sending in stories of the week all week using the hashtag DLCSOTW, DLC story of the week. And Project Morpheus / Oculus Rift, the VR bombardment at GDC, has been on everybody's page. Everybody's been sending in at Panther Shane, at USC McLeod. Tons of people have been sending this story in. And I have to say, I think on one of the final episodes of Weekend Confirmed, when we were talking about our predictions for the future, I was talking about how this was going to be the year of the VR, the year of the Oculus. And I got to say, kind of right about that. I think that's where the excitement is right now. And I love that Sony is jumping into this. Did you get any eyes on of this thing? Any hands on with it?
Which one is it? Do you want the eyes or the hands?
Well, I think the eyes are more important, right?
I did. I got to play around with Morpheus. And so I was going to not actually use it for my story of the week either, because I, as you'll hear in Garnet on Games, which just went up here about 5 minutes ago, I actually was more impressed by another tech demo that Sony had. But Morpheus is pretty nice in that I think one of the things that it showed with Sony making it comes from their experience making consumer products compared to where Oculus comes from, a more, you know, experimental and tech-oriented sort of focus. And by that I mean the actual device, even though it's a prototype, Morpheus, already feels more like something I would walk into a store or order on Amazon and bring home as a consumer product. Right. You know, it fits on your head nicely. It has, you know, it's more adaptable. It's easy to adjust. It's the hood on the front of it has a pivot at the top of it. And you can adjust that to get the ocular distance just right. So, it's really nice and sharp. The image looks really good. As the same with even the nice versions, I think we're still one version away, maybe two in display tech, from not having the pixels, right? Because you can always see the pixels when you use these things. Have you stuck your head in an Oculus?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it since last E3, but I did get to see the 1080p, or right. I don't even know if it was 1080p. I think it might have been 720p, but it was the high-def version of the Oculus. They, of course, also announced the second version of the dev kit, which is still not what the consumer product is going to be. But they announced right. that at GDC, $350 for that. They said it's going to ship in July. But it's still not quite what they're targeting for a consumer product. And neither is Morpheus, but as you said, it certainly looks much more like a finished, polished product than even the second version of the Rift does yet.
And it was really comfortable to wear. And I think that it's going to depend on what you're looking for. But for me, I found Morpheus to be something that was more interesting to me as a VR headset. Because when you put the thing on, there's like a little gap right above your cheekbones. And I liked that. I liked that there was a little, like I still had, you know, a little grounding in the real world. Whereas when you put that hooded thing on of the Rift, man, it's like you're
in the Matrix.
Helm.
Yeah. I saw a lot of people mentioning that you could still see a little of the world below you, and that it was a little bit of a bummer until the screens came on, and then it's like, oh, you don't even notice that anymore.
It's outside your peripheral vision, and you're going to be so involved in what's in front of you. I don't see it being anything other than a positive, because it does sort of, you know, it keeps you. My thing about VR, and I'm curious what others think about this, and it's something I've thrown out there, is that while it's cool to read Ready Player One and say, oh yeah, like there's a sci-fi future and write these sci-fi stories about it, do you really see people, you know, foregoing normal sensory input and completely just loading themselves up with devices that fake them out into a virtual world?
Well, I love what Sony is saying, which is sort of like we're seeing this applications for this not only in gaming, but also in, hey, do you want to tour that hotel that you might be staying in that's far away? Put on this, you know, use this piece of software and put on the VR headset and walk through it. Do you want to look at something that you can't look at? You know, I love that. And I don't think it's going to be the kind of thing. We're still years and years away from what you're talking about, which is I choose to be in this other reality rather than the real world. But it's going to, I think, be a half step toward that, which is sort of, you know, I'm going to take a vacation for a few minutes today into a place that looks and feels not completely believable, but pretty close, you know?
Well, actually, what I'm sort of getting at is, this is what I'm talking about on my show, is that we all look at this and start to think about the holodeck, right? Because we all grew up on Star Trek. But the holodeck wasn't a person outfitting themselves with all sorts of body wearable junk. It was you stepping into a holodeck environment that you experienced with your native senses, right? You used your hands and held real things, even though it was holographic somehow. And you used your ears and eyes, you know, without encumbrance. And I think that that's sort of, you know, the difference here is that we want that, but that's like the 25th century and this is the 21st century.
Right. Well, I want to frame this in the sense that a big electronics company is getting into this game, because as exciting as Oculus is and still is to me, and how they're pushing that forward on the PC, and I think really none of this would be happening if they hadn't, you know, made that first step. I think having a big consumer electronics company that has a big video game console in your house and has a vested interest in making this thing awesome, and the fact that the tech, by all accounts, including yours, seems to be there. They're not sort of doing the crappy version of it, you know?
That's not crappy at
all. That's the big deal. I think that's the big deal is a company with that kind of oomph behind them making this a real thing, and they seem to be doing it in a really smart way, saying, oh, we're going to have experiences where, you know, one person puts on the headset and other people are able to watch the television and sort of be participating, but in a different way, that asynchronous game, or not asynchronous.
So what do you think about that? I mean, how weird are people ready to be in a room with their friends wearing this giant thing on their head while others look on?
I think so. I think that's
what it's kind of weird, dude. I think it's a little weird.
But I think that's what turns it from a sideshow oddity into a fun living room entertainment thing. You know what I mean? I think that's, instead of it being like, hey, look at that weird loner who's in his virtual world, which is sort of how VR has always been painted, even in sci-fi, turning it into like this fun, you got to try this, put it on, and we'll all hang out and watch you.
And it's meanwhile, more like your girlfriend's making out with your best friend on the couch while you're wearing the VR headset.
No, that's optimistic. It's more like your friend pulls their pants down and like puts, you know, something very close to your face and takes pictures of it.
That is totally the truth, Christian.
You guys have terrible friends.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. You're one of them.
I only did that once. But Christian, tell me what your take is on this Project Morpheus. Is it a big deal? Are you excited?
It is. I'm very excited. It is a big deal. I did lose you guys for a second there, so maybe I missed this, but Jeff, you tweeted out when they first announced it that anything that still has Project in the name seems far away. And that's the only thing that makes my heart sad, is that this wasn't called Morpheus. It was Project Morpheus, and it's like, here it is. That's a skepticism. I'm skeptical about the PS4 being able to power it for like a game like Infamous, or a game, you know, that's pushing the system to use this thing. And the other thing I'm scared about is the price point and the marketing for it. Like, how do you get this in homes? And I know you said like the hotel tour and trying to make it a consumer device versus just a gaming device, but I think those are uphill challenges. But anything that gets cool new whiz bang tech, you know, into my home, I'm excited about. And, you know, like what Garnet was saying and all the accounts of people at GDC said it was awesome. So there's a lot to be excited about. I'm cautiously optimistic, I guess would be my take.
Yeah, I think I hate to frame this. As you know, I am reluctant to frame things in the sort of console wars debate thing. But I have to say, for the first time, I'm feeling like PS4 has the better price. It seems to have the better tech. It's got, for the first time, I think the thing that really makes people excited about what a next gen experience can be with this VR headset, I think it really frames PlayStation as the place to be for exciting stuff, and it's cheaper and it seems to be a more powerful box. That's pretty compelling. And I wonder if you guys think that it forces Microsoft's hand. Are we going to see the every company has their own VR headset now, or do you think that they can get away? And side note, I should mention, I think as cool as the Move integration is that they're showing at GDC, Kinect seems like the technology you want with a VR headset, right?
Well, so one of the demos that I did was the Castle demo. And
yeah.
Have you seen all the different demos that there were?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Castle demo looks really cool. You can grab the dummy and rip its arm off and beat it with its own arm and swing swords and stuff.
And I would say that that's, without a doubt, the best thing that has ever been done with a Move controller short of Pixel Junk's 3 a.m., which, you know, I love 3 a.m., but that's pretty
right.
Much. But 3 a.m. was really cool because it, you know, you really got in there and were doing something special with it. And here, they felt very natural. The Move controllers made that really work. You know, there's that cool VR moment when you reach over and pick up the sword that's stuck in the ground next to you, because you just reach over and grab the hilt and go, ah, I've got a sword in my hand. So I thought actually the move integration worked really well. Your point about Kinect is probably also accurate, but there's one nice thing about having the move controllers is it gives you, with face buttons, the ability to toggle that connection off and on. So, you know, you can stop it for a second and, you know, whatever you need to adjust the helmet and that kind of thing. Actually, one thing I want to note real quick too, because Toki, not a bumblebee, in the chat room asked this, and it's a big question that's come up. You can wear your glasses in Morpheus. And you can't do that in Oculus yet.
Yeah, it's adjustable, right? You can adjust how far away from your face the goggles are.
Exactly. So you can adjust it out. You know, you can put your glasses on and then put this thing on your head. And it's much lighter and it attaches with a ring that goes around your forehead. And then they just sort of tighten it up. And, you know, you can line it up and get it all adjusted and then bring it into whatever ocular distance you want. So if you want to wear your glasses and do that, that it works great with that.
I think VR tech and the Kinect would work well together, right? Because you'd have a VR headset on that makes it look like the Kinect is working well. So with those two technologies.
Zing. All right, Mr. Console Wars. Do you think that this forces Microsoft's hand? Do they have to now get into that game, or does it feel less than if they don't?
I don't think they have to, no. And I would be surprised if they weren't already working on something like this, if they haven't been prototyping something like this at some point. You know, I mean, VR, this isn't new, right? This isn't out of left field technology, or the idea of the technology. So I'm sure they're tinkering with it, and I think if it feels right to them, they'll bring it. They'll bring a version, but I don't think they have to. I mean, I think, honestly, they're being pretty aggressive, or at least retailers are. There was, a deal at, was it Walmart recently, where you got the Titanfall bundle for $450? Like, that's pretty crazy, you know? So, like, they're going after market share, and they're doing what they think they need to do. I don't think a VR headset is a need to have, just like, I think they could look at Sony introducing the Move. Like, oh, we got to have that, too. I mean, that was really dumb. Right? No one liked the Move, right?
Well, now I'm so glad I didn't get rid of my Move. I'm looking at the VR thing and going, oh, well, it's useful that I have this. Hopefully it still works on the new, I don't have to buy new Move for PS4. But well, I do have to buy, what's that?
I think Clarence in the chat room beat me to the punch that I was sort of waiting for a opening to say here, which is that Microsoft should just, you know, I don't know about buying Oculus, but they should really invest in 100% support of Oculus on the Xbox One.
Well, from what I've heard, and I could have this wrong, but I thought I read somewhere that Oculus publicly said that they weren't interested in going to consoles, that they were focusing on PC. But maybe that's just a sort of PR thing so that they
can
have
say whatever you want to. Someone walks up to you with a Brinks truck, you're going to be, oh, yes, I'm very interested.
That's a good point.
Full of the game Brink? That doesn't sound that appealing.
They have those, though, because nobody bought it.
If they did something with Oculus, it would have to be a partnership, because you can just imagine that they would have to have, you know, some sort of outboard processing unit for the thing. And let's not be naive. I doubt very seriously that the Morpheus runs solely off of the PS4 internal hardware, even in a final form.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it also raises the question, it sort of requires the camera. Are they going to sell it bundled with the camera? What about people who already have the camera? Are they going to have two different SKUs? I mean, there's a lot of questions. And it's, as you pointed out, Christian, it's a long way off. So there's a lot of stuff to be answered. But what I love about it is the energy of a company that's pushing forward in this kind of thing. This is what you want to be jumping on board as an early adopter for. You want to be with the company that's giving you the exciting stuff to look forward to. And I think it speaks to that. And that's why I framed it in the console wars debate, because I feel like for the first time, we have one company that's really going, look at what you have to look forward to on this platform. It's really exciting. And I got jazzed about it for sure.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's the first time. I think maybe it's the first time a console did something that excited you. But I think, I mean, that's what Microsoft did with Kinect, right? I mean, it was, look what you have to be excited for on the Xbox 360 platform. And while people said it was kind of similar to the Wii with motion control, but they were, what they touted originally with Kinect was incredible, right? And it was like, this is what we're going to bring you. And they're getting closer now with Kinect 2.0. But I think I think people are being creative and exciting in all the consoles. They're all trying to do things. I mean, even the Wii U tried to show you, look, this is what you can do with our console. Isn't it awesome? I mean, I think what you're feeling is that just VR is speaking more loudly to you than some of these other techs did when they were announced.
Yeah. Well, speaking of other techs announced at GDC, I think the other huge... Oh, actually, I'll let you bring up your story of the week, Christian. Was it going to be VR, or did you have something else?
No, well, my story of the week, I mean, maybe we can get to at some other point. My story of the week is we're all playing great games. Like, we're here. It's March. Like, movie season is coming. Like, game season is now. I mean, you guys have spent time with Titanfall. I've been in love with Infamous and Metal Gear. That's my story, is that three great games are out right now for people to go play on any console they want of, you know, current gen consoles. And that to me is big news, because people have complained since they came out, though, there's this drought. Not anymore. Go play your games. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And we will be getting to those games shortly, but I do want to hit some of these other big stories of the week, which, you know, as big as the VR stuff was, I think equally big is this seems to be engine war that we're having right now. And it's a race to affordability for indie developers, which is, I think, nothing but great for the end user. We're going to get more games. Unreal Engine and Crytek both announced drastic reductions in cost. Both are limited at this point to the PC, neither of which are talking about developing for consoles, so that should be pointed out. But both are extremely affordable. I mean, Unreal Engine 4 is $19 per month plus 5% of your gross revenue, which can be big or small depending on how big your game is. But Crytek is just doing a flat $10 a month for the CryEngine license, which is crazy
per
to
user.
Me.
Per user.
What? Oh, right, per user. But still, I think that's pretty low. And I think what it shows is that this sea change that we've been seeing in the last few years in the video game industry is fewer gigantic blockbuster games and more games overall. And I think both of these engine manufacturers are saying, hey, we get it. More games are coming out, and the margin of profit is much smaller on these games than they ever have been. So we're betting on more people making games and those games making less money. Am I off in that assessment?
That's interesting. I don't know if it has to rely on them making less money. I think they just saw, hey, we can do this too, right? I mean, I had it as a potential story. The Wii U is touting you know, all the Unity engine games that are in the works for that system, and people have been singing Unity's praises for a while now. And I think if you're a company that makes an engine, you look at that, and it's not, well, we're going to make less money doing what we're doing. It's you look out at the corner of your eye, and you're like, oh my God, there's all that money over there too, right? Like, we want that money. We can go get that money? Then people have proven that you can make small indie, quote-unquote, games with, you know, Unreal Engine stuff, right? It's not super complicated for a small team to work with. And so I think they've created a licensing approach now where they can, I think, where they're trying to have it all, you know?
Yeah. What do you think, Garnett?
I think Unreal Engine is really the big story here, because CryEngine, that, you know, that's, it's a cool engine. And when Crytek has employed it, they've done some great things with it. But when you move into this sort of model for a game engine, you're relying on developers working with developers to make things work. So Unity is the, you know, case example of this, because, you know, people haven't actually been singing the praises of Unity so much as enjoying the ability to get their games out on multiple platforms. Unity actually is a bear to work with. And there's a number of different libraries, and a lot of folks just develop their own libraries and runtimes to work on top of Unity. So, you know, the development space for Unity became very tight-knit, and sharing of information back and forth between developers. And part of the story with the Unreal Engine announcement is that Epic intends to move its, you know, its engine support to that same sort of model, to a very open encouragement of, hey, developers, tell each other how you're using the engine, how you're doing things inside the engine, and support one another. That sort of support for CryEngine will be a bigger challenge unless there's a dramatic surge in the number of developers using it. It's also not clear right now what exactly the CryEngine package is. The Unreal Engine package is everything. It's source code, it's tools, it's the whole package. And CryEngine stopped short of saying that. You know, they talked about, you know, having the SDK and the tools available, so, you know, I think right now the Unreal Engine is the big deal here. it's also been proven to be very versatile. I mean, look, you've got, you know, you don't have to build a super spectacle game on Unreal Engine anymore. You can do 2D platformers. You can do adventure games. There's lots of stuff you can do there. So I think it's really interesting what it opens the door for, you know, indie game developers to use. I saw a cool game, actually. And the other thing is, don't forget, most of the Oculus demos you're seeing are Unreal Engine driven. So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, so I saw this game at GDC in the GDC play area called Xing, X-I-N-G. And it was really cool. Jeff, you would love this. It's basically a Myst game done in VR on the Unreal Engine.
Amazing. It's screaming for that, right? The VR technology, and you think, oh, what is the perfect marriage of that? Is that Myst type game? That's very cool. That was the extent of your experience with that game? Did you get to try it?
Actually, they had two demos. The demo that was really cool in the Oculus was more of like a fly through the, you know, this beautiful jungle scene sort of thing. The story is that you're in a sort of purgatory land. You appear to be dead, and you help other souls escape this purgatory world. And all of the pieces of narrative direction in the game are given to you in poetry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's such a departure, it's such a departure from all the other Rift games or all the other VR games right now that are very, you know, I'm going to scare the bejesus out of you.
Yeah, I was kind of stumbling there because I was trying to remember if that was the game that I tried at PAX Australia last year. Because there's a game. It will have been, yeah. Because you assume different forms, right? You become a giant tree and you become a female elf thing. And you wander around.
I did
around.
Not do the playable part. I was just doing the like fly around. I wanted to do the VR thing. Just did the fly around inside the world part.
And,
like,
yeah, that was very cool. I got to try that.
Maybe like three people.
Game. Yeah, right. Very, very cool stuff. And I love that VR is opening up these new kinds of game experiences. And I don't know. I'm sold on this whole thing. And I can't wait to buy one of these consumer versions. I don't think they can arrive fast enough for me. I'm sold.
What's your price point? Hypothetically, I know we're talking out of our butts here, but what's your price point that day one for you, Jeff Cannata, would pull the trigger?
Well, sadly, I probably have a much higher price point than most because I'm such a sucker for this kind of stuff. I think a smart price point would be, God, I hope it's like $249. you think that's way too high?
Way low.
Yeah. Well,
what do you think, Garnet? What do you think when these come out?
$500? What I think the price will be, or what do I think a smart price point would be?
Well, give us both.
A smart price point is really challenging because it depends on how refined the final product gets to be and what sort of software there is to go with it. A couple $100, you know, maybe even less because we are talking add-on. Look at how much struggle Microsoft even had with Kinect, and you know.
Wait, you just laughed at me for saying $249, and now you're saying a couple $100?
Well, you were talking about a smart one.
Well, what are you talking about?
I think honestly, the add-on nature of it really makes it a problem. I was laughing because I think that the real price of these things, when they first come out, they'll be exclusive. That they'll be, you know, in the $400 to $500 range, unless something really dramatic happens in development time. I mean, maybe by the time they're ready, there's enough advances that producing them won't be as challenging as I think it will be.
Because, I mean, the Oculus Dev Kit 2 is $350, right? And so, I mean, will that go up or down?
Yes, it is, but keep in mind it's a dev kit, and they're still trying to get it out to get stuff made because they want to be, you know, selling a product eventually.
So you think that's lower than what the consumer release
will be? I don't think they're selling it for $350 and making any money off of it.
Okay. I mean, that's a struggle then, right? The dev kit was $350 and then it comes out to consumers at $450. I'd have a hard time
swallowing
that.
Ethan in the chat room says that the Oculus people have said their target price is $300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think $299. Yeah. I don't know. That's rough.
It's expensive. The future is expensive, unfortunately. It's weird, too, because we've talked about this before on, you know, episodes we can confirm it's come up and it's not necessarily a brand new theory, but it's interesting. It's all on how you can sell it because, you know, Samsung wants you to buy a new Galaxy S every year. Apple's like, it's the new hotness every year. And people are okay with that mostly because it's subsidized, but you're still with a subsidized price. People are paying $200 for a phone. I think the way you do this is you make it acceptable somehow, right? That it's not geek porn, that it's not some weird nerdy niche thing that it's like what they're doing with hotel tours or whatever. You make it a consumer device that your wife or your girlfriend or your non-gaming boyfriend or, you know, your mom and dad don't look at like your old Master Chief Halo 3 collectible edition helmet on the shelf and be like, roll their eyes. It needs to be cool and safe in the home, if that makes sense. And then I think you can have a higher, well, they can have any price they want, but that's how it's easier to accept a higher price.
So well, let's be honest then, what you're saying is that Oculus wins with porn.
Well, everything wins with porn, which is definitely going to be the title of this episode. And segueing right from that to paying our own bills, because, you know, this show needs support as well. And we get it from our friends at New Relic. We have to thank them for sponsoring our show. I want to tell you guys about New Relic. New Relic is a software analytics company that helps make sense of billions of metrics across millions of applications all in real time. 2014 is the year where people are really focused on seamless application performance across multiple platforms on all their devices, which sounds simple, but making an app work consistently on lots of different devices, all with different operating systems running different types of software, is really complex. How complex? Well, back in 2007, which really wasn't that long ago, it was basically impossible for an app developer to know how his or her app was performing once it got shipped to production. In those days, they'd spend a ton of time doing internal bug hunts and eventually just crossing their fingers and hoping for the best. Then you just sit around monitoring Twitter and the app stores, waiting to see how people reviewed your apps, whether it was performing or not performing. But thankfully, those days are now officially behind us because of New Relic. New Relic lets us track application performance down to the end user level all in real time. That means you can spot problems, find bugs, and fix your code fast, way before users even notice anything is wrong. So go check out New Relic by visiting www.newrelic. I don't have to say www anymore. What year is this? I'm crazy. newrelic.com/all the W's. newrelic.com/DLC. That's the important part to learn more. And then use the offer code DLC30 to take advantage of a special 30-day extended free pro trial. You know, you can use the W's or you can not. It's completely up to you. Browsers, believe it or not, have progressed. So we thank New Relic for supporting the show and for using a URL that's easy to remember, newrelic.com/DLC, and that promo code DLC30. Okay, guys, I want to go to the phones and hear what people have to say about VR headsets in general. Remember, you can call into the show at 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. We got some people on the line now. I want to hear, I got somebody from 412 area code. You're on the line. Are you excited about VR?
I am excited about VR.
Tell me why.
Okay, I know, Jeff, you're a Disney guy. Have you ever been to the Disney Quest Park in Disney World in Florida?
No, I haven't been to Disney World since I was about 10.
All right, so Disney Quest is like this big indoor theme park they tried to launch in like the early 2000s. And one of the big attractions of it was all these different VR experiences. They had like a virtual Aladdin's Magic Carpet ride. And then the one was a virtual ride through a comic book where you had a lightsaber. And ever since having done that when I was a kid, I wanted that in my house. And we're finally getting to that point. And I feel like there's a lot of cynicism around it. People are like, oh, it's just for loners in their basement. But, you know, we play video games to be immersed in them. And I think VR is going to be that way that we get to that next level of immersion. And it's not going to be for every experience. But if I think of playing a version of Skyrim that's optimized for a VR headset, I think that's like a really cool way to immerse yourself into a world, into a story. And as long as they can keep it around, I think that $300 price point that Oculus talks about, it may not go completely mainstream, but for the hardcore gamers, I think it's going to be a really cool option to experience your games.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, for me, that is exactly my killer app for VR as well, is give me a role-playing game in first person where I wander around this intricate, well-defined world. I think it's the next frontier, and I think it's really the excitement point for saying what the next generation can be. So I don't think you're not going to get any disagreement from me. What do you think, Christian?
I mean, I take a little bit of an issue with the expression what the next generation can be. Like, where this came up in reviews for Titanfall and for Infamous, and it's like, in that case, it was not next-gen gameplay, and this doesn't feel next-gen, and next-gen this, next-gen that. I don't know. I mean, I get it, and I'm excited, and I think it's great. But I think sometimes that you and I, Jeff, and I think a lot of, you know, gamers, we're always looking at the next thing. And then because of that, we're viewing what we currently have through this hypothetical future lens that we'll never get. And then it's hard to be happy where we are, right? I mean, we both try to loving things and enjoy things, especially on this show, you know, be optimistic about everything. And I think VR is great, but I don't want it to ruin the great things that we have. And I also think that sometimes, this is maybe why I live my life, the glass is neither half full or half empty. It's just half. There's no there's no glass. I think if you pin your expectations too high on this thing and you're like, this is what next gen's going to be, you leave room for disappointment. And then because of that, you didn't enjoy all the great things you've had in the meantime. Does that make sense? I hope it does.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. It's, you know, I'm just amped about this. And it's the first, you know, we have these new boxes, and I think that we aren't in the generation that's going to give us this great leap forward in visuals. We haven't really seen a great leap forward in AI, or there hasn't really been this thing that we can latch onto and say, in this generation, it's really going to give you an experience that's unlike what you've had previously. You know, last generation was the HD generation, and that really did have a effect on enjoying these console games. And I think for the first time, I'm seeing a technology that is really exciting for me. So that's why I'm jazzed. But there's lots of other big news this week as well, and I want to get to some more of it, including some announcements from Ubisoft about some games, including Assassin's Creed Unity. This was sent in by 09M Shatra, who thinks this might be the biggest story of the week. Assassin's Creed, set in the French Revolution, full-on next-gen. They showed a little teaser of the engine, and it looks real purdy to me. What do you think, Garnet? Does it have a purdy mouth?
Well, propers to Ubisoft for responding so quickly to having a leak out there and not doing the, hey, nothing to see here thing, but actually putting together a trailer for this. I think that, saying that is in engine is a bit of a stretch, because you can see that it's obviously heavily visually affected, but that's cool.
Well, they didn't say which engine. It's in the cinematic engine that's used.
Well, Christian, I don't know that many games are going to use cinematic engines in this generation, simply because it invites the uncanny valley separation between the two. And in some cases, you know, you put so much work into animating your characters in game that going out to an external house for animation sort of doesn't make sense anymore.
Oh yeah, no, totally. Especially for the games, but they make great trailers like Batman Arkham City, right? I mean, there's no way.
Yeah, for early stuff, absolutely. For early right. stuff like that, and you know, visualization for sure. Then there, it looks good. I'm more excited by the promise of the French Revolution. I mean, I think here's the thing about Assassin's Creed that's interesting is it's well into its franchise lifespan now, and they show us something new, and we still get excited about it, based off of the, you know, how fertile history is to give them new places to go. When was the last time you played a game in the French Revolution?
Yeah, never. And that's the whole thing about Assassin's Creed is it constantly comes up with new settings that we haven't seen before. And I love that. Speaking of new settings, Ubisoft also announced, Far Cry 4 going to be in the Himalayas.
Which is Ubi.
Right, it is Ubi, right. That's why I said that. Himalayas, 2015, snow-capped mountains, mythical Yeti. I loved Far Cry 3. It is one of the best games that year, in my opinion. I'm glad Far Cry... The yodel. I love it. Far Cry is going to be a little Skyrim-y. You know, it's going to be all snowy. I'm sure there will still be low elevation jungles and stuff. Are you guys excited about Far Cry 4? Think Himalayas is a good pick?
Yeah, I mean, I see more caves in this. I know, like, Far Cry 3 was this big, you know, open island, but I loved some of the encounters where things got small in Blood Dragon, for instance, some of the facilities. I really enjoy that experience. I love the contrast. And so I picture where my imagination goes for the Himalayas is you're out in the middle of nowhere and then you stumble into this cave and you're like, you dig deeper. It gets narrower and narrower. And then like that claustrophobic feeling after you left this great expanse, I think could be really cool. And I also think survivability in that type of environment could add. Far Cry's always kind of played with that. And I think it could be an interesting twist because you're not, you know, just battling sunburn. You have to find a tauntaun to cuddle up with to keep warm. It's going to be, it has a lot of potential.
I like what Baron says in the chat room here. Can snowboard? Like, yeah. I mean, if we got hang gliding in the last one, let's get some snowboarding / parachuting stuff. Snowboard off a cliff, parachute. Yes.
Worked in Final Fantasy VII.
That's right. That's right. More news, guys, including another thing that I know I keep tooting my own horn, but this is another thing I predicted in our prediction show back on Week and Confirmed. Big time TV show coming to the PlayStation Network. Powers, yeah. the Bendis, Oeming, amazing comic book. If people aren't reading that comic, it's great. It's really great. It's coming to the PlayStation Network. This is a big time drama. Well, you know, comic book superhero drama. I think it's going to be an hour long show. They said they're currently working on 10 episodes. This was a show that's been in production, or not in production, but in development for a long time. And it was bandied about on several different networks for a long time. The voice of Yoda was going to direct it. Yeah, what's his name? Brain is not working today. Anyway, I think this is a great thing, and I think this could really legitimize both PlayStation and Xbox when they start doing stuff like this, because I think it's inevitable for them to do it. What do you guys think? Oh, Frank Oz. Thank you. Frank Oz. Thank you, chat room. Great director and great voice, man. All right, Garnet, tell me about Powers. Tell me about TV shows on your consoles. Are you in?
So rumored to have a similar budget to the stuff that Netflix does. So I think the production wise, you know, we're budget. In good shape. That's probably not a concern. But you know, PlayStation has so far been the console that's all about games and gaming. And to feel the need to hop into this space does a little bit feel like a response to, well, you know, Microsoft is doing that Spielberg Halo thing and we want to be in video and entertainment. We better get a show together. I'm unsure on its future and how well does it get into the, I'm just not even sure I want video, you know, original content television shows based on platform exclusives or, you know, being platform exclusives. You know what I'm saying?
No, well, I think so. I think that's where I wholeheartedly agree. And the biggest problem with all of this is everybody having their own video on demand service. And it's not like you turn on your TV and you watch CBS for a little bit, then ESPN for a little bit. It's, you know, you turn on Netflix and you have to power off that app or that device. Or if you're using it on, you know, PS4, you close that app, or the Xbox, you close that app, and then you launch the Xbox TV app, or then you turn on your PS4 because you just watched Arrow on the CW app on your Xbox One, and then you watch Netflix. Now you want to watch Power, so you turn on your PS4. It's annoying. I want something. I think this is the same reason why internet TV, you know, YouTube specifically, people, you don't sit down to watch it. You seek out the thing you watch, and then when that's over, it's the end of that experience in that app. And I think until you can have a fully unified, you know, here's
everything. You're talking about cable. You're talking about cable. Oh, if I want to be able to sit down and turn it on and just click over to whatever I want to watch. And that's cable. This is an alternative.
Yeah, Jeff, Netflix and Amazon Video are approaching that. I mean, they're basically appliances now. You can pick up, you can watch Netflix and Amazon Video on everything under the sun. We're like, what, a year away from them showing a refrigerator at CES that has a screen that can do Amazon Video in the window of it.
But the thing you guys are missing about this, what you're saying is, I want all these awesome shows to be in one place. And the thing you're missing is that one place can't afford to make all these awesome shows or won't make all these awesome shows. The only reason this is being made is because there's this company that has all this money that wants eyeballs on their particular channel that you're already paying for anyway. So you're going to get it. So they want content. So they're able to make a Powers show, which is awesome and hopefully will be as good as the comic, because they need eyeballs on their over on their system. So
I agree that's why, but I still think that sucks. And it's not cable per se. The Wii U tried to do it, and Xbox One guy tries to do it too. It's just not fully integrated. Like it's annoying. If you want to sit down and watch something and you have to think, okay, I'm watching Justified. Well, season one of Justified was on Netflix. Well, okay, so now it's an Amazon exclusive, so I need to go over to that. Well, I guess they show reruns on FXX or whatever. And I love content and I own all these things, so it's easy to find. You know, I know where they are and I can watch them. But from a user experience, it's not ideal. And the problem is what you said, Jeff, is that everybody wants to do this. So instead of Powers being on Netflix or a thing you already have, everyone's going to set up their own thing. And then pretty soon WB will have their own. Oh, you want to watch a WB movie or show? Well, you got to have the WB app. And now there's going to be commercials in that because they want some of that ad revenue. And you're paying a $10 Netflix subscription fee. Well, now you got to join Amazon Prime because Nickelodeon is only on Amazon. And then it gets back to this point, like cable is annoying, but you see this and it starts to make sense why it existed, right? Because you get all this stuff and it's fractured out. And that's a pain.
One way of saying it is fractured out. The other way of saying it is a la carte, which is kind of what we've always wanted. Is
a la carte is iTunes. A la carte isn't Amazon and Netflix. Because you can't pay just for a show.
No, you're right, but you can choose to pay for the kinds of shows that network gives you. You know what I mean? You can sign up. If you're thinking of Netflix as a network and Amazon as a network, which is what they're becoming and what PlayStation is venturing into, the waters PlayStation is venturing into with Powers, is saying we will fund shows, then I will say, okay, well, I will subscribe to your network for X dollars a month and your network for X dollars a month instead of having the cable company tell me what package they want me to subscribe to.
Hey, Jeff, let's say you like Powers. How long do you think Sony's appetite for making a show that doesn't generate direct revenue? Because keep in mind, the play here comes down to attracting eyeballs into their system. So it's going to be really hard each year for them to come back to the, you know, the people who keep the wallet and say, yeah, give us the money to make season two. The people who keep the wallet say, well, what did you earn for us last year? And they say, well, look at all this goodwill. Look at all of the fans we've got for it on PSN. And look at all the people tweeting about it. And they're like, and then the person with the wallet says, yeah, I'm not giving you a dollar per hashtag. It's just not sustainable. And so maybe down the line, you know, then they have to look at, do they license the content out after X amount of time so that it could go to Netflix and, you know, to Amazon? Do they cut a deal there so that it actually does generate them some revenue? And then it's, you know, get it first on PSN or then, you know, you can watch it later on Netflix. There's got to be some answer there. But I don't see it just living. I don't see a series just living as a – I don't see them building – look, if it's one series, then – that's not enough to make a channel. So then they have to, you know, do two and three and four and five and have other content to support it. That's a huge endeavor. And so
yeah, but
a
I
lot
think
of money right now.
That's what I'm hoping for. I mean, I want more
Dude,
awesome stuff
to
watch.
They don't have the money to do it.
Talk about games for a little bit? Because I feel like I've been negative, Mr. Poo-pooing on all of Jeff's optimism. And there's a lot of awesome this week. I feel bad being like, Jeff says he's excited about something and me being like, I'm like my daughter. No.
And I still have to tell him about my favorite tech of GDC. So yeah.
What's your favorite tech of GDC, Garnet?
So dude, this is the thing that you, Jeff Cannata, would have squealed like a little girl at. And that is eye tracking. So they had a demo inside their press area where it had they had Infamous, the new Infamous on PS4 running on it. And this was just a demo area, so it does not imply that they're going to do this because it's a ways off. But they were showing this experimental system where you put this thing in front of the television, and it looks like a Kinect camera. It has a couple sensors on either end, and it lines up on your eyes. And then once it's coordinate, you know, all locked in, then you drop into the game, and the camera control now just moves naturally with wherever you look in the game.
And it works?
It works flawlessly. It is so... There is this moment of brain melting where you realize, first of all, you realize, wow, the camera's jumping around a lot. Well, the camera's jumping around a lot because as you sit naturally, you just sort of look at different things. So I get accustomed to that, and I start running around a little bit, and the big moment for me.
Before you go too far, tell me about getting accustomed to that, because that already sounds really tough to get used to.
Actually, quite the opposite. As soon as you turn off, as soon as you stop thinking, this is the big thing. You stop thinking about it like a video game. You stop thinking about, I need to move the right stick to look someplace, and you just look into the screen and play the game in front of you. And it, your eye naturally goes where it would go, except instead of you having to fiddle around with a stick to put the camera there, the scene just follows it as if you were watching it. I got up on top of this building, and I'm standing there, and this is early on. I'm like, okay, this is pretty cool. And something goes by my peripheral vision, and I think to myself, well, that's really weird that the camera just followed that across the – oh, shit, the camera didn't follow that across the screen. I watched it go across the screen.
Wow.
And that was the moment where I was like, oh, my gosh, everything in this world now works the way the real world does. If I'm talking to you, Jeff, and we're like we're at GDC, and you know, someone walks by that we know, for a moment, we follow them with our eyes, right? Even if I'm talking to you, because I have eye connection. Think about the implications for game design of this. All of those things that, you know, depth of field added to cinematics by attracting the eye's attention, designers now have available to them when this starts to, you know, be incorporated, because you see something happening, you know, behind what you're talking, where you are, or over to the side, and it gets your attention. Or think about this, an infamous third-person action game and a parkour game where typically, you know, you're fighting the camera a lot. Not anymore. You're running away from enemies who are chasing you, and you're trying to figure out where to go, and you just, you know, glance right, glance left. Oh, it looks like there's a place I could get around the building there to the left. And if you're just holding up on the stick and making little adjustments, then you just, you're going where you're looking, exactly like you do in the real world. You're just going because you're looking and you're going.
I'm in love with this. I have several questions. One of which is, first of all, our eyes don't move smoothly. They jump. So is there a jump thing, or does it move smoothly from thing to thing?
It is. You say your eyes don't move smoothly. Well, are you, you know, maybe you drink too much caffeine? I mean, yeah, they move smoothly.
No, no, no.
I mean, it tracks with your eyes.
No, an eye does not move smoothly. It jumps. An eye jumps from place to place. That's how an eye works. But maybe they have the tech to beat that. My more salient question is, what happens when the dog runs through the living room and you look over at the dog? Does the dude on screen start freaking out?
If your eyes get off of the entirety of the, if you look so far afield of the screen, then it attempts to pan to that side in a hard pan.
Yeah, that's problematic because, I mean.
But it reestablishes. As soon as you look back into the screen, it reestablishes.
All right. Well,
and
I would
really
love
cool
to see
because
that.
The other thing is, and it's especially poignant in Infamous, is that, you know, again, if you're thinking about using the right stick, you're only looking at what your brain says. Okay, I want to look over to the right and up. Okay, I move the stick over right and up. Here, because it's such a vertical game, you know, I want to see what's above me. I just glance up and I can run up there. I was being way more vertical in the game just by nature. And I didn't have to worry about, you know, fighting the camera when I was moving really quickly parkouring, because instead of me trying to figure out keeping the camera with where I was going, it just followed me because I was looking there.
It's crazy. I want
to
take a call.
I agree. It needs to be combined with some head tracking stuff because, as you noted, you know, if you have to look away or your head moves to a position that it can't quite read correctly, then obviously it won't work. But head tracking, which we have on Xbox One, which I'm going to try out this week because now that I have an Xbox One, I want to try it out in Forza. Head tracking has the other problem, which is if you're not lined up cleanly and stay lined up cleanly, then the camera can misread the intent of what you're doing. So, you know, if you're not lined up properly, the camera may read you being off to the left and think, oh, he's trying to look to the left, when in fact you're just out of alignment with how you initially set up the camera. So I think we need a combination of both and software to reconcile the two.
Yeah, even more problematic than that is you don't
you don't really move your head too much when you're looking at your television screen. You know, you're not, you don't have to turn your head to the right to look to the right. You just move your eyes, which is why this eye tracking seems to be more interesting.
Yeah, I think it's eye tracking combined with head tracking just to set the control point for the eye tracking. In other words, the head tracking would identify to the software, oh, he's turned his head to look at something outside the screen, disable the eye tracking for a moment.
Hmm. Let's take a call before we get into games. We will get into games right after this, Christian, I promise. But I want to get another call. There's a lot of people want to jump in on this. And we got somebody from 269 on the line. What do you think? Eye tracking or VR? What has you more excited?
Definitely VR. I think the Morpheus is going to be really cool, but Oculus is where it's at. And I like the idea, like the competition between them. And I think it'll ultimately help kind of build excitement and probably popularity from both. That's where it's at.
Yeah, I agree. I think the competition aspect is great. I mean, I think there was already a fire under the ass of Oculus Rift, but certainly doesn't hurt that the big monolithic Sony comes into it. And I think it honestly puts pressure on Microsoft. I think it puts pressure on Microsoft to maybe, even if they're not doing a VR headset, to do something that is a game changer in the same way. I think that the pendulum of excitement has swung solidly, if it wasn't there already, solidly in Sony's corner. All right, speaking of pendulums of excitement, your pendulum of excitement is resting solidly on games, right, Christian?
Yeah, so, it's a big story, man. We didn't.
I want to hear what you think of Metal Gear.
Okay. Is it worth the money? No. Is it fantastic? Yes. Either of you guys played it at all? Ground Zeroes?
No, but if you give me 20 minutes, I'll get right back to you.
That's so funny. Well, one,
but
yes,
true. That's why you only had to respond that way. There was nothing else you could say.
Well, no. So I mean, that's the thing, right? This game is for Metal Gear fans and people that are eager and anxious to see what's next and what the Fox Engine is all about and what, you know, the gradual evolution of the control scheme and how Metal Gear is presented and what stealth is and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you can get through the main mission quickly. I mean, there was a speed run where it was done in 10 minutes. I think it took me 2 hours, and that's mostly because I was, oh my gosh, I was having a perfect playthrough, and then very close to the end, it all went to hell in a handbasket for me, and I had to shoot my way out of a bunch of stuff and ended up with like a C rank, and yeah, it was bad. But with that said, you know, my completion percentage of the game is, you know, 15%. Like, there's a lot more to do in the game than the main mission. It's just whether or not you're the type of gamer that wants to go back and do those things. For instance,
honest about what those things are.
Right. Well, they're like achievements, basically. Like, what would typically be an achievement or trophy, where it's, you know, rescue all the hostages or shoot this tank, or it's things like that. It's not new levels. There are some. It's all on the same map, regardless of the mission. But then after you beat the game, you can go back and do side missions where you're still in this camp. It's one big, large, well, not that big, but it's a large base. And then it gives you points of interest to go through and do these things. So if you have fun in that world, though, and in that camp, those side missions are enjoyable. They're fun. Yeah. Is it the same map you were just on? Yes, it is. Is the experience slightly different? It is, because you're interacting with that map in a different way, right? This isn't open world in the sense that, you know, it's not a Legos, it's not Minecraft, where the next time you go back into the original play set, you have something totally new to do. But there are new challenges and things that you might not have done on the first playthrough. And I really enjoyed the mechanics and the controls of the game that make those things appealing to me. All said and done, I'll probably put this game down after I've spent maybe 6 hours on it. To me,
$10 an hour.
It was worth it. The experience was worth it. The Fox Engine is gorgeous. I'm playing on PS4. I've heard, I have a friend who has it on Xbox One, and they've had a great experience. I don't know what PS3 and Xbox 360 versions are like, so I can't comment on those. But it's really cool, man. Peace Walker was one of my favorite Metal Gears. It was on PSP and then later came out on HD collections for you know, other systems. And it's a Ground Zeroes is more in line with Peace Walker, where it's a little bit more reined in terms of the crazy that Metal Gear can be. And I know sometimes people really like that crazy. There still is crazy, like the, you know, there's Skull Face or whatever his name is, that could end up being a zany character down the line. But it's grounded. It's, you know, you against troops and trying to extract prisoners from a camp. And it feels more organic in the way that things are done versus some other stealth games where, you know, you have a light meter on your back, like Splinter Cell often. Your suit will light up if you're in the dark so you can tell, and this, that, and the other. And this game will shine, will have a on-screen notification on the HUD if someone is looking at you or searching for you to kind of let you know that. But a lot of the other stuff is just contextual. And it's interesting the way it plays out and the evolution of that. Like, enemies will still get exclamation points over their heads at times, but it's not the bright red one that you've seen in other Metal Gears. It seems like it's a more toned down, quote unquote, real experience. And if you're a fan of Metal Gear or have been a fan of stealth games, check it out. I mean, if you live close to me, yes, you can borrow my copy, Garnet. Give it a whirl. I recommend you checking it out. Is it worth the money? Probably not. That's a decision you have to make. Like, I have no regrets, but I understand the crap the game is getting from people that bought it and played it. What frustrates me is the crap the game's getting from people that haven't played it. It's easy to take pot shots at it, right? And be like, oh, you can finish it in 10 minutes. That's so dumb. Do you know what else you can finish in 10 minutes? Super Mario Brothers 3. It's a great game.
That wasn't what I thought you were going to say.
What do you think I was going to say?
That was the joke.
Oh, I
Christian,
get it.
Did you feel it's well worth
the money for this reason, Christian? If you're a Metal Gear fan, this is content that they've already said is not going to be in the final game. You want to have this. So, you know, you're kind of in that position of being between a rock and a hard place. And really, if you're a fan, they have you. They've got you. I mean, you're invested in the series. You know you want this content. You know you want to see it and play it. You know you want to have that background. So it's kind of a moot point.
Yeah, Christian, as a Metal Gear Solid fan, how do you feel about him sounding different?
It's tough. I think Kiefer does a great job. It doesn't sound like he's phoning in the voice in this game at all. It sounds like, you know, it's really well done voice acting, but it's still hard not to hear Jack Bauer for me. I'm a big 24 fan as well. He does a great job in this game, but it takes time, right, to adjust to. I think as you play through all of Metal Gear 5, I think people will tend to like it. It is a more grounded, realistic portrayal of Snake than what David Hayter had in some of the other performances. And I'm sure, I mean, he's a great voice actor, but it's just a different direction. But yeah, it's weird. It's weird. Like when he shows up and it's in the trailer, he's like, kept you waiting, huh? And I'm like, yeah, because it was going boop, 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 boop during commercial break.
Hey, Garnet, since the last time I talked to you, you got an Xbox One and have been playing Titanfall. I have to admit, Titanfall has kind of fallen out of the rotation for me since I've gotten back into Diablo and playing Infamous, but I want to hear your take on Titanfall.
Well, so since you're turning games to me, this is the part where I have to humble myself first and bow to Christian for being right about Tearaway.
Oh.
It's
I was also a big fan of that game. I was telling you it was awesome too.
Have you finished it, Canada?
I have not finished it. I apologize. No, I have not finished it.
Spicer is the champion of all things Vita. And I just wanted to tell you, Christian, I took my Vita with me to GDC and started playing Tearaway and was smoking blown away. Just completely, even knowing what to expect, even having seen it some, actually sitting down and playing hours of the game, so engrossing, so effortlessly taking advantage of the Vita hardware and doing it in such a childlike and playful way. This is, without a doubt, Media Molecule's best execution because it combines their creativity with a game that mechanically really, really, really works well. So I know you guys probably don't want to belabor that a lot. We could talk about new stuff more here, but man,
I've heard a little
blown away.
A birdie very far away. I heard some fun things about Tearaway, and I think that's, I don't know if I can say that, but I already said it. I'm excited. That game's great. I want there to be more. It's such a good game.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is it's really, I don't think it's replicable for other, you know, developers, because it's both, you know, an example of how great the creative spark is at Media Molecule, and then also, I mean, how many storybook games do you want? So,
yeah,
you know, I think that's two challenges. All right, so Titanfall. Man, Jeff, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that the Titanfall bug that bit me is going to be a really, really run hot and cold. You know, I see this as a game that that I'll get into. I mean, I was into it, and I was loving it and having a great time with it. But when I got back from GDC, it wasn't like I felt, well, God, I just got to go play some more Titanfall right now.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in playing more. So I know that I'll play more, and I think it's going to be a binge game. I think it'll be a game where, you know, and I think that that is a testament to its approachability, though I think that there is a good bit of balance work to settle out. I mean, obviously, there's stuff that you earn in levels that is really valuable. You know, my gaffe from my show 2 weeks ago when I was talking about Titanfall and said, you know, I really wish there was some way that you could, you know, electroshock guys off of your Titan when they rodeo you. Well, I was one level away from opening the smoke shock. So I was like, oh, okay, so they've got that, but I just needed to be higher level. And because it is so approachable and they have so many people of different levels, and they seem to still have that Halo problem and everybody else of having people of different levels in the same matches, you know, that creates an unweighted situation that's not as much fun.
Yeah, I'm in the same way. Christian, you had a great tweet this morning. You said, you talk about a feeling that I always reference as well, that feeling of when you're away from a game, just wanting to get back to it. Just like, oh my gosh, just give me 5 more minutes with that game. Give me 5 more minutes with that game. And during the beta, when we talked about that on DLC, I really felt that with Titanfall. But now during the actual release, I haven't. And what I have felt that with is Diablo and Infamous. And I think you're right, Garnet. I think I will, you know, there'll be a time when I go back to Titanfall and play it more. But it feels a little bit samey to me at this point. In that way that I never really get hooked on multiplayer first-person shooters, because it's sort of wash, rinse, repeat, which sounds ridiculous from a guy who just said Diablo is what he, you know, keeps going back to, which is clearly wash, rinse, repeat.
I think it's not that it's samey, Jeff. I would say that this, you know what Titanfall is? Titanfall is a super delicious grilled cheese sandwich.
Right. Yeah. There's not any meat in it, but it's still yummy.
Well, yeah, and you'll go back and, like, someone says, hey, you want to go down to the grilled cheese truck? I mean, and the grilled cheese truck does have, like, delicious barbecue pork in their grilled cheese. But anyway.
That's so good, yeah.
They say, you want to go down to the grilled cheese truck and grab a grilled cheese sandwich? And you're like, yeah, totally. But just knowing that the grilled cheese sandwich truck is out there every day, you don't go and hunt it down because you, like, want to go have a grilled cheese sandwich from the truck every day.
Right.
And I think Diablo is a little different, Jeff. I don't think Diablo is wash, rinse, repeat. I think Diablo is just rinse, repeat. I don't think you ever wash when you get hooked to Diablo.
It's true. I'm sitting in the clothes I was wearing yesterday.
It comes out tomorrow.
I'm so excited. It's pre-ordered. It's ready to rock midnight tonight. And we will be talking about that
expert card.
Oh man. And Hearthstone is out officially as well. So much great Blizzard stuff. But all those, even as much as I'm back in Diablo, and man, that 2.0 patch is fantastic. And not for the reasons people have been saying, for me at least. I love the new loot system. Yeah, it fixes the loot system. Yes, but really, it's much more interesting because of the adaptable difficulty level, that thing that has been put in. That is what makes the game so much more interesting to me, is the interplay of the different difficulty levels and being able to hop back and forth at will, anytime.
It's the loot system.
No, dude. I think the loot system is a part of it, but it's being able to play at the right difficulty and having it. It's not just that Act One is less hard than Act Two. It's not that anymore. It's that everything is adaptable and all parts of the game are as challenging or not challenging as you want them to be.
I hear you, but the Zen moment for me of that game is that the problem with the auction house system was that it enabled you to get exactly the gear that you wanted, but it did it, and that's bad, because number one, you shouldn't get exactly the gear you want, because then that takes away the fun of juggling stuff, and then it also took you out of the game to get gear, because basically the stuff that you found was something you would go then market to generate money right. to respend to buy the stuff that you wanted to get back in the game and actually play it. But the fun of the game is having a build of a character that you like and finding gear that fits it but isn't perfect, and then deciding, you know, so I always play, you know, a range character first. So I'm looking for dex gear. So let's say I have a really high dex gloves, but now I find gloves that are almost as high but have health regen, and I have to start making these decisions. And it's those decisions that make the game awesome, and having the loot system right put all those decisions back in.
You're not wrong. I just think for me, the one
They're
trumps the
good.
Other.
It's like Neapolitan ice cream. I'm going to do the loot thing all day.
Yeah, you're clearly hungry. But I think as much as that is a great game to talk about, Titanfall, a great game to talk about, we've been burying the lead here, which is Infamous. And I have been having an absolute blast with Infamous.
Oh, I wish you hadn't said that.
It is so great. It is so great. And I don't want to talk about any spoilers for the game, but I have to say that what they nail so well in that series and in this installment in particular is the powers, because the powers are so much fun and so different and outside the box. And yes, you start with smoke, which is basically a fire power that you've seen in every other game. But I have to say, the game starts with basically, if you're a fan of Avatar: The Last Airbender, like I am, you're basically playing firebenders versus earthbenders for the first section of this game, which is amazing. But then I won't spoil it, but then you get more powers. And the more powers that you get are so different and awesome and feel next gen. And it makes me so excited to get the next thing and experiment and the traversal of the city and how I get around. I mean,
so good.
So good. It makes you feel like a superhero. I mean, the thing about super powered games or superhero games is you have to A, love using your powers, and B, yep. feel empowered when you are on the rooftops. That is a central trope to being a superhero in comics and movies. And when you are on the rooftops, when you're above the city, that's the realm of the superhero. And this game nails that so well, getting up above things and how you get up above things. I mean, with the smoke power, shooting through those vents to get you up. It's such a brilliant idea, and how everything revolves around the motif of each power as you get it. And that the powers as they progress are so interesting and so different and so cool, and change up how you attack enemies. And the fact that I'm playing a hero character instead of a villain character, I'm always given interesting decision points as to how to take down groups of enemies to try to maximize the hero points that I'm earning to get me a higher.
I love the way being a hero is harder than being a villain.
Like, well, I don't know. I haven't played villain, but
I'm a hero path as well, but you can look at the perks or, you know, what the tree is and the weapon upgrades for villain. You just kill people. And the weapon upgrades for hero, you stun them and then you get to take them down.
But how brilliant is it that
it's awesome.
You're shooting for headshots with the bad guy, but you're shooting for foot shots with, I don't know anybody that's ever done that before, where you're like, you're trying to tangle their feet up so that they're incapacitated, which is brilliant. And it makes it just as skill-based as a headshot would be,
yeah.
But it's just changing things up and making you, use a different version of the same skill set. It's brilliant. So you're loving it too, right, Christian?
It's so good. And you know, the written reviews, and I don't care about the score, this game's not for everybody, but it did bother me when people were like, this game doesn't feel next gen. I'm sorry, when you climb up to the top of a very tall structure in Seattle and then you look out across this city and there are no load times and you can go anywhere in that city and the sun is dynamically setting, like light is changing. And as you come around, the way the light affects your view, it's so amazing. It's such a beautiful game. Like, there are a few, I can nitpick it, right? I always like it when you leave footprints through puddles and mud, and it doesn't happen in this game. And if this is your first Infamous game, please know that it's still the same, where enemies have uncanny accuracy.
Well, that's with any, it seems like that's with any open world game, where as soon as they know where you are, all enemies can shoot you with extraordinary accuracy. You know, yeah, I feel like every game is like that, and it really bugs me. I think that's one of those things from open world games that really bothers me. I mean, so many of those games are like that.
Yeah, like I'll feel like I ditch a group of guys and I get around a corner, then I pivot back around to like try to flank them, and out of nowhere a grenade hits me, and I'm like, son of a man.
But how cool is the superpower versus superpower battles? I mean, they are awesome. Yeah, the only thing that I absolutely hate about this game is one particular boss battle that I've had so far that is so out of place and so poorly designed, in my opinion, and so frustrating and stupid that I couldn't believe that I was having that experience in this game that was so crafted such a fun experience. And then all of a sudden you're in Devil May Cry for some reason, all of a sudden. And
unfortunately, the series is known for that at times. Ugh. Also, where it's almost like, oh man, what was the game, stealth game, where like the boss battles were developed by a different developer.
Deus Ex.
Deus Ex. Sometimes Infamous games will feel like that. You're like, this is so amazing. I can do all this. Is the wait, what? What am I? No, come on. Okay, now this is awesome again.
But another thing that the series is known for, and really on display in this game as well, is really fun storytelling. The cutscenes and your sidekicks and stuff, which have always been fun in Infamous games, are great here. I love the acting. It's wonderful performance capture that they've used, and the actors are fantastic. And I really dig our main character. Like, his joy at being a superhero is fun to be a part of. Like, you like that guy because he's having a blast, you know?
Yeah, I think it's well performed and well captured. I do think the story is a little heavy-handed and throwawayable at times, but in terms of the voice acting and the performance capture, it's top-notch. It's great. Garnet, have you played this game at all? Are you just not liking it?
No, I'm sad.
You haven't played it yet?
No, I'm sad because it was like the decision that I had to make on you know, monies and attention. And the good news is that there's not much coming out for several months, and I will get to play Infamous during the drought and enjoy it.
Well, the good news is when I railroad through this game, I will happily loan you my copy because I have a disc-based version. Did you go digital, Jeff, or do you have disc?
I have disc as well, yeah.
So
it just makes me sad because, you know, now I have a little bit of buyer's remorse with my Xbox One, and I think, man, I could have just bought Infamous and I would have had a great time with it. And, you know,
it would have
worked both ways.
You can play it with the rest of your day after you're done with Metal Gear. All right, we got to move on to, we got some big business to do with March Madness. Madness, madness, madness!
Are you getting as many upsets as the real tourney?
Yeah, there's some big upsets. Have you been, did you check the link that I sent you about
link?
Bracket?
Tetris, yes, Tetris Gate 2014, you mean?
Well, Tetris Gate is pretty big. Tetris Gate caused a lot of controversy. So if you're not keeping up with that, Garnet Lee, last week we had a big showdown between Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, the 2 seed, against Tetris, the 10 seed. Okay, so March Madness is where we got 32 teams.
I'm looking at the grid.
They were submitted by listeners to the show. The number of votes they got from the original submissions determined their seeding, okay? So then we determined the winners through talking it out and votes. You can find the votes on my website, jeffcanada.com. Scroll down and you can link over to the votes. So we went against, the vote was a barely 50% for Ocarina of Time, and Tetris was right behind it. And all three of us on the panel, Dan Trachtenberg was our guest last week, all three of us on the panel thought Tetris was the more important game, the game that should win. Although it was tough. It's not that we didn't like Zelda. It's not that we didn't like Ocarina of Time. We just felt like in 100 years, people would still be playing Tetris, and in 100 years, people would not be playing Ocarina of Time.
You people are crazy.
And Dan Trachtenberg is a Hollywood big shot director, so his vote counts times a million.
That's true. And so we overturned the will of the people. Now, I never said it was going to be a direct democracy in this, but I want to read you a taste of the kind of
Tetris
emails
Gators,
we got.
I would have fought for you on this one. because I would have been oh, all don't Zelda you, all the time.
Don't you try to win over the will of the people. You, in retrospect.
Meanwhile, I would have voted, I would have supported you guys, and meanwhile, I have my own podcast. You can go to-
All right.
Which is hella better.
I want to read you this email. This is representative of lots of emails and angry tweets and other things that were sent in to us. This one from Prince Rados. He said, I have to write in after this week's abomination of the week. Tetris over Zelda in the March Madness tournament is ridiculous. I can accept if it was actually voted to win, but how can you overturn a vote? That's the whole point of a voted tournament. To get the thoughts of a wide variety of people. You all talk up Tetris to influence some of the voters, and it still loses. That's the result. If Eastern Kentucky beats Kansas by a point, NCAA doesn't overturn the result because they felt that Kansas should have won. It may sound like I'm upset.
Let me just win this argument for you right here, Jeff. How many Nintendo generations, not one handheld, but generations have been made by having an amazing Zelda game? How many generations of gamers have grown up playing Zelda, coming to Zelda and having that amazing experience and being drawn into gaming for so long? How many other games have looked to Zelda as a guide? Zelda, hands and head and shoulders above Tetris. Tetris might have been a moment, but that's the that's what the 60 Minutes guys say. Oh yeah, that Tetris game was really important. But gamers know Zelda was there.
Well, yeah, I mean, worst mistake and Spirit Link on iTunes left us reviews that would agree with you, Garnet, where
what, folks? Tetris progressed in the tournament. You know how many people got into basketball because of Duke? And yet Duke did not progress in the tournament, did they? All right. So we're not arguing over last week's results. We're arguing over this week's results. All right. So we're down to the Elite Eight. We have four big matchups to determine.
Why do I not see the results here?
You should go to jeffcanada.com, scroll down to the Elite Eight posting, and then click on that bracket because it has all the filled in correct bracket. The first one we have to determine is Super Mario 64, the one seed, versus Red Dead Redemption, the four seed. So, Garnet, put your money where your mouth is and tell me which one of those progresses.
Super Mario 64 or Red Dead Redemption?
Yes.
Yeah, you don't know what the people like.
Oh, now he's in the hot seat. It's easy in retrospect, isn't it? When the S hits the F, all right. You know what? I'm going to a call.
So actually, you know, here, look, here's
Garnet,
the deal.
I'm going to a call.
Here's the deal. I love Red Dead Redemption, and personally, Red Dead Redemption would be my favorite game here, but Super Mario 64 is the winner of this bracket.
I'm going to a call. I'm going to find out what the people think first.
So we can do the opposite.
At 850, you're on the line. Super Mario 64, Red Dead Redemption. What is it?
Mario 64, the established 3D platformers, as well as showed that, hey, 3D, you could do 3D as a thing. It is, Nintendo delayed the N64's launch for a year for that game. While Red Dead Redemption may be a good game, if you're going in terms of significant importance, Mario 64 wins that hands down.
That's a good point.
That's a question. Are we going historical significance or are we going game you prefer? Because if it's game I prefer, I think it's probably Red Dead. And you're arguing for Red Dead, Christian?
No, I'm just being a jerk. Mario 64, it's not close. Like the game you prefer maybe in recency because you enjoyed Red Dead, but the game you prefer the first time you played Mario 64 and you experienced real joy for the first time in your life, like it's Mario 64. Come on, don't be stupid.
Yeah, Jeff, clarify for me. Which way am I supposed to go? Because my Super Mario, I mean, I'm exactly with the caller. 3D platforming owes its entire history of modern, you know, modern history, at least, to Super Mario 64 as the pioneer. So are we historical value or are we my favorite game?
Well, Garnet, that's why it's the madness, because it's whatever your, when you hear those two, which one do you think should progress in the tournament? That's all what's right. Crazy.
I'm sticking with Super Mario 64 because that's my answer. Final answer.
The people are with you.
Next time.
The people are with you. It's 63.8% for Super Mario 64, 35.2% for Red Dead. So Red Dead goes down, despite my preferring it to 64.
In fact, maybe it comes back in DLC.
I think that Super Mario World is the best Mario game. And I said that last week, and I stick with my guns. All right, moving on. The next matchup is... I'm going to save this one. I'm going to go over to the other side. I'm going to flip-flop over to the Spicer division and go Last of Us, the number one seed, against Mass Effect 2, the number four seed. This is pretty easy for me, but what do you guys think? Last of Us, Mass Effect 2. Garnett?
I'm on Last of Us. If you had done Mass Effect 1, I might have seen this as more of a contest simply because Mass Effect 1...
Mass Effect 1 is not a very good game at all. Mass Effect 2 is
an excellent game. You are nuts.
Do you remember when we argued about this back on One Up Yours when it first came out?
And I will argue with you again about it. Look, Mass Effect 1 may have you might not like the way it was set up, but it was a better role-playing game, and it established the framework for this move that we've taken by many, many, many games into a more action-focused third-person adventure game style of role-playing games. So Mass Effect would have been, you know, the bigger one here, but of these two, I'm on The Last of Us.
Christian?
Yeah, I mean, it, and I just gave you a hard time about recency, but Mass Effect 2 is pretty recent as well. The Last of Us is the better game between these two. It's better storytelling, a better experience for the player, and still today remains one of my favorite games that I've ever played. I will take this to the mat. The Last of Us wins this. Jeff Cannata, I know you agree with me.
I do. I'm not a fan of the Mass Effect series as a whole. I think it's overrated. But I think Last of Us, I'm not as big a fan of that game as most people are either. I think it has an amazing story. I just think the mechanics are a little bit, I don't know, not what I was hoping for with that game. But a great game.
Your mechanics too. It's seen you shoot a free throw, and your mechanics aren't that great.
Well, I'm not arguing with you there. But the people are with us saying Last of Us 53.5% against Mass Effect 43.5%. A lot of abstainers in this one. So Last of Us making it to the final four. All right, moving on to, we'll stay in the Spicer bracket, and we'll go number three seed Skyrim versus number seven seed Portal.
This is tough.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the phones first. I'm going to go to the phones first on this one and see what the people think. Let's look at 432. What do you have to say about this matchup? Skyrim Portal. Yeah.
Oh, it's got to be Skyrim. It's the only game that you can sit down and play for 80 hours and have actually accomplished nothing. Just exploring caves.
Is that for or against Skyrim?
That's absolutely for Skyrim. I appreciate Portal for the social experiment that it is, but gameplay, story, just general involvement. Skyrim is everything we love about video games. So you got to go Skyrim.
I love the poetry with which he makes his argument. It's everything we love about video games. I will say that I can sit down for 80 hours and play Tetris and have accomplished nothing. we'll save that for another time. What do you think, Garnet? Skyrim or Portal?
I think that it's important to back out a second and say this is a contest where when you look at it, you immediately think the overwhelming weight of the content in Skyrim against the, you know, light content, so to speak, relatively, of Portal. But then you have to think about the impression they made on you and the impression they made on people. And I'll just say this, the cake is a lie.
Yeah, if we're judging it by memes, I think the cake is a lie beats an arrow to the leg, right?
Arrow to the knee.
To the knee.
See, yeah. That's why it beats it, because I didn't even quote it correctly.
And you know, I mean, look, for me also, I think Skyrim to me gets a little bit lost in its vastness, and that's what people who like it really like about it. But for me, it's Portal, tremendous innovation, took the shooter mechanic and then said, hey, I don't have to be shooting bullets and I can still have this amazing experience with it, and pushed people into having these, I mean, look, fundamentally just logic problems, but they were so fun. So many great things you could do with it. Innovative Portal.
Christian? Yeah, I think what this March Madness is proving, Jeff, is that there are no winners and the only losers are our iTunes reviews. I agree with a lot of what Garnet said. I really agree with what our caller said too, but for me, Portal felt new and different and gave me an experience that I never imagined having playing video games, while Skyrim gave me one of the best experiences of playing video games I've had, if that makes sense. And for me, what I was looking for, this is tough. Because I have to vote, I'm voting for Portal. But if Skyrim wins the people's vote, I will not challenge it. That's where I fall.
I have not looked at the people's vote. I'm going to take another call and see what somebody else
Macho
might.
Macho Man Randy Savage would go for Skyrim.
He certainly would. 479, you are on the air. Skyrim or Portal?
Man, it's so tough. Desert Island, I'd have to pick Skyrim, like you guys have been saying, because of the content. But I also think there have been... Sorry, you guys caught me walking. trying to get in shape.
10,000
steps, really brothers. Well done. Other really well done, long RPGs, and Skyrim's an evolution of that, but Portal is so unique that for this contest, I got to pick Portal.
I like thinking that he wasn't walking, it was just the weight and the gravity of this decision got him out of breath.
He's like, oh man, what's it going to be? Oh, maybe he just had to walk it off. Okay, I'm picking Skyrim because... I think that other caller summed it up perfectly. It's everything that I want in a video game. For me personally, I love Portal. Portal adds humor to games, which is all too rare. It's beautifully designed. It makes you feel smart and awesome. It's got an interesting mechanic that we've never seen before. But I'd rather be playing Skyrim, honestly. I haven't looked at the statistics yet. Let's see what the people say. Oh, man. Wow, it's not close. Portal, 60.9% against Skyrim. Right. Skyrim, 38%.
Wow. I'm surprised.
I am too. I thought it would be much closer than that.
Here's why I think it's not as close. I think the people that voted for Portal finished Portal 5 years ago, and the people that like Skyrim are still playing Skyrim.
They don't have time to vote. They gotta
exactly.
they have to get into a drunken brawl in that bar.
Chickens to kill, things to do.
All right, Portal moves on to the final four. That's pretty exciting.
How about that matchup, though? Portal, Last of Us? That's a hell of a matchup.
No, it's not.
Okay. All right, let's move to the round that will not speak its name. Number 10 seed Tetris, the Cinderella of March Madness.
They totally got a ref's call. There's no way that was a foul in that three-point play. A four-point play to end the game at the end of regulation? Come on, Tetris.
I'd like instant replay.
up against number 3 seed, Half-Life 2. You guys know I think Tetris is sort of the greatest video game of all time. It just sort of objectively. I just think it's a pure video game experience that we will always have a version of Tetris. I was having this argument because we've been talking about this all week. I was having this argument with a friend over dinner, and I was like, Tetris is the chess of video games. It's like you can't compare it to other board. You can't compare chess to other board games. It's chess. It's above all the other ones, and it's the chess of video games. And somebody said, well, what about video chess? Is video chess the chess of video games? And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess. So that was, I thought, funny. What do you guys think? Half-Life 2 or Tetris? I kind of have a feeling where I know where you're going to come down on this one, Garnet.
The people demand retribution. And it shall be exacted now through the hands of Gordon Freeman.
Oh man. Okay, I'm going to take a call and see if the people really do demand retribution. 949, you're on the air. Does Tetris need to be taught a lesson?
No, you know, I think against Half-Life 2, Tetris definitely blows away. Tetris is a classic game. Half-Life 2 was a staple for storytelling and first-person shooters, but I don't think this is really where Tetris is going to fall.
Wow. Support for the Tetris. I love Half-Life 2. I think Half-Life 2 is in my top three video games of all time, with Ultima 7.
It goes and... Tetris, Half-Life 2?
No, that's what I'm saying, is Tetris isn't on my list of best games of all time, because it's like, it hovers above the list. It's like, you can't compare it to anything, and that's the problem, is how did it get into the tournament? What do you think, Christian?
Oh, this isn't easy, man. This is not easy. One is so unique, and it's, yes, there have been other puzzle games, and to some extent, even match threes owe something to Tetris, right? The column, the dropping, the bejeweled, all of that owes something to Tetris in some form or fashion. You see what piece is next, and you can speed it up when you drop it down and twist it in the air and all that crap. Half-Life 2 took a genre that had existed for years and said, this is how you do it. The big dogs in town. Oh, first person shooter, they've been done, right? Nope. This is how you do it. Oh, you want a horror game? Easy. Here's the best horror game. By the way, it's just a level in this Van Gogh masterpiece. Go eat.
Yeah.
Oh man, you know what'd be crazy? A weapon that you've never seen or dreamed of before. What is it? Oh, you're only playing with freaking gravity. Deal with the gravity of that situation.
You play with gravity in Tetris. Just saying,
you can drop the piece when you want. This is
no. There is no experience in gaming. Still, no experience that compares to getting the blue gravity gun in Half-Life 2 at the end.
Dude,
it is one of the greatest experiences.
About that gravity gun, when we first played that and around the office, because I was still at Ziff, man, it was insane. People's minds were blown.
All right, guys, yeah. I have not looked at the statistics yet, but I'll tell you this.
Half-Life, by the way.
Yes, I got that.
Okay.
I got that. I haven't looked at the statistics, but I'll tell you this. We're going with whatever the statistics say. We're going with the will of the people. This will be a pure populist vote. Okay, I'm clicking now.
Take it to the mat, Jeff. Take it to the mat.
Oh, my God. Hundreds and hundreds of votes. You're not going to believe this. 49.7%. Versus 49.9%.
What the crap?
And the winner's
2-1 and 2-1 on your panel.
It's the winner's Tetris. I'm not
two
lying.
2-1 on your panel. Follow your rules, brother.
We're gonna do the thing that refs do where they have they call a penalty to make up for the penalty that they missed.
Well, refresh the page. Refresh it.
I just did.
Give it one more.
Are you packing the votes?
Chat room, vote. I'm going to add justices to the Supreme Court. Make it happen.
There's literally one vote difference between the two.
I find it interesting that Garnet and I don't have access to these quote-unquote results you speak of, Jeff.
I will forward you the link if you want. I'm not lying. All right. Half-Life 2 is moving on. We're going to get retribution on Tetris, and now I'm going to get emails for the pro Tetris people. Man, I can't.
So which one are you going with? Are you following
you
the people?
Decide,
is it Tetris?
Jeff, well, actually, Christian, it's your show too. I mean, this is DLC. It's both of you guys.
It's one vote. No, it's one vote. It's one vote.
Refresh the page right now.
So, Jeff, if it's one vote, that means that it is actually a tie because you voted once, which adds one to Tetris, and Christian and I voted twice for Half-Life, which means it is actually a dead heat.
Tetris is the bane of my existence. Now it has moved. somebody is rocking the vote right now. All right, Half-Life
tough
is
call.
Moving
it's
on.
A tough call, man. You're in an unenviable position.
Okay, here's what we'll do. Whatever this caller says,
that's crazy.
No, yeah, don't
that's
do that.
Crazy.
That's a bad idea.
All right.
I think maybe you can do like a runoff or a play-in game. Or,
let's do this, Jeff. Let's do this.
Madness. It's the madness.
I propose Half-Life 2 moves on. And I think that's the way the vote has been shifted now when you refresh the page. Am I correct in saying that?
You are correct in saying
Okay, so it's with the people, the live people. Half-Life 2 is with the people. It's also with Garnet and I. Half-Life 2 moves on. And then Tetris, the game in another league, according to Jeff Cannata, after we finished March Madness, we picked the winner of March Madness against Tetris, and we just let them battle it out.
All right. Okay, moving on. We got that's just crazy. Oh, so your final four are Super Mario 64, Half-Life 2, Last of Us, and Portal, which means the big winner so far is Valve.
Because you could literally box. two games from the orange box, as was pointed out.
You could literally buy two games from the final four in one package for $60. That's a pretty good deal. Pretty crazy.
So all right,
guys, we're running out of
time
here.
Christian, who do you think is going to win this thing?
Now that I got rid of Tetris because of that treachery I just managed to pull off, I think The Last of Us has a pretty good shot. No, I'm actually happy. There's no winner. There's no winner. There are only losers. We're losing listeners by the minute because they're getting mad at our gaming opinions.
Wow.
I think Super Mario 64 has got a pretty good track here.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, well, it was the number one seed, you know. It came in with the power. It came in with
the
power.
How did you do the seedings?
It was pure votes. So whatever had the most nominations for being in the tournament at all. So more people nominated that game than any other game in that bracket.
Okay.
So I did straight numbers.
Neither of the twos made it through.
No. Pretty crazy, right? All right, guys, we got just a little bit of time left, but I do want to get to tabletop time and debut our brand new tabletop time bumper music. Right now. That was sent in by Zero Star. I think it's pretty rad. Tabletop time. Where we talk about games on the table, board games. And I know, Christian, you recently played Wits and Wagers.
Yes.
Had you played it before? I feel like I have played it with you. Okay, so you
introduced me to it a while ago. And I thought my family, my in-laws would really enjoy it. They enjoy Trivial Pursuit, and Wits and Wagers is a trivia game that's actually fun because everyone is involved along the whole way, and there's not sitting around waiting as someone goes, "Well, I can figure it." No, you can't. You can't figure it out. You're not going to get a pie piece. Move on. It keeps everyone engaged through every turn, and it's quick and fun. And my in-laws were visiting and we played it, and it's a great board game. But what playing Wits and Wagers showed me is why I tend not to like multiplayer games, video games, and also board games. I am a competitive person and I enjoy winning, and it stinks when you're playing with a group of friends in board games like this and someone loses. Like we played six games. I won three of Wits and Wagers and I lost the other three. And one of the games I won at the very end, or like the game we played, Jeff, with Garnet, and like when Garnet won at the very end, that's fun and stuff, but how do you get over that with board games where it sucks to lose?
I have fun playing board games whether or not I lose. I love the mechanics of them, and I'm a pretty competitive person too, as you know, but I don't know. I'm not hung up on whether I win or not. I just want to be sort of in the mix. If I'm really losing a lot and I'm out of it completely, then I tend to not have as much fun. But if I'm just sort of in the middle of the pack, I'm having a good time.
See, I think that's why I like single player video games. It's because it's, you know, you're competing just against a computer and you're always winning because you're playing the hero of the story, and multiplayer video games, and also like in Wits and Wagers. I don't know. I just feel bad sometimes, like there's treachery involved in board games a lot, and I sometimes feel bad, like it was a question that I clearly knew the answer to, so I knew that everyone would bet on what I bet, and it was at the end of a game and I wrote down a clearly wrong answer, but that was close, maybe, like it wasn't super far-fetched, and they all bet on it, and then as the timer was expiring I moved my chips to one of their answers that was closest without going over, and I won the whole
game.
I felt so bad doing it. I was like, thanks, mother and father-in-law. You guys are wonderful people. By the way, kiss my butt, you lose.
Well, maybe next week we'll talk about cooperative board games, because that's the solution to your problem. But unfortunately, we're running up against another show coming in here on 5x5, so we got to leave it there. We've been short-shrifting tabletop time every week in the last few weeks because of March Madness, but we're wrapping up March Madness, the end of March, and we'll get back to more of that stuff, and we'll devote more time to talking about stuff we played as well. Appreciate you guys listening to the show and participating and calling in, and really appreciate you hanging out with us, Garnett. You are our first time multiple guest, and this is your third appearance on DLC. So
awesome.
Thanks for hanging out with us. In the meantime, till your next appearance, where can people see your stuff or listen to your stuff?
Hey, you can get a hold of me over on Facebook. That's where I started up the official page for Garnet on Games. And if you don't have Facebook, there's also a thread running on NeoGAF. I'm looking into some options of maybe starting up a Squarespace site or something, but that's Garnet on Games. You can also catch me on Twitter. It's just my name, GARNETTLEE.
Very cool. And Christian, how about you? What's going on with you this week?
I'm on Twitter at Spicer this Wednesday. I will be at the Irvine Improv if you're in the Orange County area for a great show with Grant Cotterd, who was part of the Double Jump band. You might have seen him if you came to some live Double Jumps. And looks like I might be out in New York this summer as a, so, you know, place that little flag in the sand. Mr. Cannata, what do you have? What do you have popping?
Well, I've been doing NLB minis, and I'm going to continue doing them. I did a bunch last week. We got more coming this week. So check out my YouTube channel if you dig that. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/CannataJeff with two N's and one T. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Jeff Cannata. On Twitter this week, at Frobisher. He must have heard our little the little tribute we did a couple of weeks ago to Harold Ramis passing away, because he said that DLC stands for Dogs Living with Cats. Mass hysteria! You can also check out my website at jeffcannata.com. That's where you go to vote on the final four for next week's March Madness.
www.jeffcannata.com.
Right. Well, don't forget the W's. It's very, very important these days. But yeah, you can vote for our next round of March Madness. We're wrapping things up. We got our final four in. So get those votes in before next Monday. Hopefully you can hang out with us Mondays. 11 a.m. Pacific time is when we record the show at 5x5.tv/live. Until next week, we really appreciate you hanging out with us. Think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.